What's going on, guys? This is another edition, episode of The Block Report. And I am your host, the Magnificent TDK, a.k.a. Tafari XL. And here we are again. This is my post-election edition. Of course, I didn't do one anything in regards to the election. Of course, this was kind of something that, not that I personally avoided, but for me, I felt like there were so many talking heads and everyone out there that were going to say what they wanted to say and do what they wanted to do about it that, you know, I left it alone. There's so much more other things to talk about. Although I will briefly address the election issues and this edition here shortly. Once again, you can find the Block Report Podcast on Instagram at the Block Report Podcast. You can email the Block Report Podcast at theblockreportpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, you can tune in to the Block Report Podcast on all your favorite podcasting networks, including, well, podcasting services and providers, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and many others. Okay, so there's a few things I'd like to talk about. There's great news in the market. The stock market jumped up today. Had a great boost. A lot of stocks, a lot of people made some money, especially towards in the early part of the morning. If you woke, you might have woken up in the morning and then saw your stock portfolio had definitely grew. However, towards the end of the day, those mega cap big tech stocks, they sold off, or the stocks that basically were making money, in particular like Zoom and Netflix, and stocks of that nature, they sold off towards the end of the day and in favor of stocks like the airlines, the cruise lines, all those type of stocks where people would be that would definitely benefit from a vaccinated or more healthy community society without the fear of catching a virus. And this all, although the stock market was going in a positive direction at the beginning of the very early beginning stages of the trading session, there was a piece of news that came out that turned the tide tremendously. And we're going to read here from an article from the New York Times about that piece of news that changed the events in the stock market. And the article starts with Pfizer. Early data shows vaccine is more than 90% effective. Pfizer announced positive early results from its coronavirus vaccine trial, cementing the lead in a frenzied global race that has unfolded at record-breaking speed. The drug maker Pfizer announced on Monday that an early analysis of its coronavirus vaccine trial suggested the vaccine was robustly effective in preventing COVID-19, a promising development as the world has waited anxiously for any positive news about a pandemic that has killed more than 1.2 million people. By the way, the article might mention this, but I'll take a side for a moment to mention that the United States now has reached a total of 10 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 currently at the moment. Although we must take into consideration that the PCR tests, which is the test of standard, and a lot of these other tests, they have been known to produce false positives. As I continue with the article, Pfizer, which developed the vaccine with the German drug maker BioNTech, released only sparse details from its clinical trial, based on the first formal review of the data by an outside panel of experts. The company said that the analysis found that the vaccine was more than 90% effective in preventing the disease among trial volunteers who had no evidence of prior coronavirus infection. If the results hold up, that level of protection would put it on par with highly effective childhood vaccines for diseases such as measles. No serious safety concerns have been observed, the company said. However, it has been noted, and this is outside of what the article is stating, other entities and medical professionals and individuals and people who are monitoring the situation have said that it would take some time. They would have to monitor the people who took part in this vaccine testing and trial for a while to determine if there would be no side effects or adverse effects down the line. So they would have to monitor them for some time. This is still new. And as we must remember, the virus is around about, as far as we know, 11 months or 1 year in existence. So this is a fast turnaround for a vaccine. And even having a fast turnaround for a vaccine, they still have to monitor people to see how long they can go to determine how long the vaccine can remain effective and not harmful to people. So we're still in the early stages of this thing. Although it is very understandable that people are very excited and the stock market is extremely excited about it. Although I anticipate that some of that excitement will temper and some of the boost in some of these stocks, certain stocks that excitement, as I said, will temper and you'll see other movements to signify and signal that. That's just my opinion. Now, considering, because what I'd like to say, what happens is that a lot of people, what they do is when they get the news and get certain piece of information, there's something that they tend to do. And we'll just say what it is right here with this. When you hear the news, what do? You get. When you hear that news, you get. When you hear the news, you get. What do? You get so. All right. Yeah, you get emotional. But then after you take some time and you start to think about what's going on, and things start to dawn on you and information starts to sink in, you perform differently. Intelligence, here's a quote, an original quote. Aside from the article, intelligence is the fuel for the vehicle, and discernment is the navigation system. Emotions have nothing to do with it. But anyway, emotions will have you make terrible decisions. So, let's continue. The next with the article, Pfizer plans to ask the Food and Drug Administration for emergency authorization of the two-dose vaccine later this month, after it has collected the recommended 2 months of safety data. By the end of the year, it will have manufactured enough doses to immunize 15 million to 20 million people, company executives have said. So the stock market is going crazy for something that can possibly only immunize 15 to 20 million people. Now, they claim they had, Pfizer claimed, when I say they, Pfizer claimed they had 50 million doses. And so that would represent 25 million people. So it's not like they had a cure-all or a straight shot answer. And we also have to take into consideration that some people are on some anti-vaccine. So there is a contingency of people who are on an anti-vaccine, not taking any sort of vaccine, even when it does arrive. So must take that into consideration. But it is good news that a vaccine has been developed, and it has, and the good news, not that it's been developed, but the good news is that apparently it's been more than 90% effective, which is like phenomenal news. If it was 50%, everybody would have been cool with that. Excuse me. According to all the analysts and officials out there. So that's some of what's going on out there as far as in regards to that. Oh, and as well, there are other companies that are preparing their vaccines and getting vaccines done, and like Moderna, J&J, Johnson & Johnson, so on and so forth. It's dozens of them at least, if not maybe hundreds. And so there may be several vaccines that will be developed in order to, so as time progresses, there may be a point where one is better than the other, one is highly more efficient than the other, and they may have, and some may have, other benefits than the other one. So then now what one, if allow me to extrapolate a little bit and elaborate on this, is that there will be a consumer bidding war on which vaccine to take to decide which one is the best. And of course, as the phrase goes, the cream will rise to the top. So whoever is the best of the best will be the one to win. All right, so in addition, Joe Biden has been declared the president-elect for the 2020 presidential election, and Joe Biden, he came out with a statement. He's actually come out several times since the election. Apparently, he's made a statement in regards to what he aims to do in his first 100 days, and as well, he made a statement about this is a time to heal in America and uniting the country. So what we'll do is, we'll play a little bit. I haven't actually heard these clips, so I'll be listening to them with you, and we'll just play a little bit of it, and we'll hear what the president-elect has to say. Let me cue this up, get the audio together, and then we'll hear it out. 1 second, guys. All right.
Convincing victory, a victory for we the people. We've won with the most votes ever cast on a presidential ticket in the history of the nation. 74 million. What I must admit has surprised me tonight We've seen all over this nation, all cities and all parts of the country, indeed across the world, an outpouring of joy, of hope, renewed faith in tomorrow, bring a better day. And I'm humbled by the trust and confidence you placed in me. I pledge to be a president who seeks not to divide, but unify. Who doesn't see red states and blue states, only sees the United States.
Okay. Sorry, guys. I didn't intend to do that on purpose. But a few things he said right there just went ahead and just sent bells off in my head. For one, Joe Biden's talking about hope and change. Wasn't that Obama's slogan when he ran for president? Joe Biden is saying, I don't see red states or blue states. I see the United States. I mean, this sounds like all the writings from David Axelrod and his staff and his crew. So basically, I mean, it could be a coincidence, but it sounds to me that whoever was the team that Obama had around him that gave him all his talking points and what to say, it sounds like it's the same team. And I'm not saying that there's anything necessarily wrong with what is being said. I'm just saying that one should recognize a pattern. I'm not criticizing what is being said and saying that it's wrong, it's terrible, and it shouldn't be said. I'm saying that one should recognize a pattern. So, is Mr. Biden planning to run or conduct his presidency as Obama did? Or is it the same crew, or is it the Obama crew running the Biden presidency? Anyway, that was enough of that speech, because we could tell where that was going just with the opening. Let's hear what Biden had to say for what he was going to do, what he aims to do in his first 100 days. This clip is a lot shorter, so I'll look forward to playing the entire clip, and we'll see what President-elect Joe Biden has to say about what he aims to do in his first 100 days as president. Just so you guys know, you are listening to The Block Report. I'm your host, the Magnificent TDK, aka Tafari XL. This is the Block Report podcast, where we review news, current events, social issues, so on and so forth, and all things and matters that actually it's all totally up to our up to us what we like to broadcast and bring on this platform. So anyway, let's play this video and let's hear what President-elect Joe Biden has to say about what he aims to do in his first 100 days. Now, notice, guys, first of all, before I play, and I know I'm taking some time before I play, but notice, guys, what I'm doing for you is that I'm not speaking for them. I'm allowing you to hear the words from their mouth. Whenever it's possible, that's what I'm most like to do. Because when I give my opinion, I want you to know it's my opinion. But when I'm saying something, or I'm giving and I'm saying something that someone has said, or this is someone's position, I like for it if I can actually let you hear it from the horse's mouth. No pun intended. So let's hear what President-elect Joe Biden has to say about what he plans to do in his first 100 days. One second, guys. I don't know what this is. Okay, apparently, I am terribly sorry about this, guys. Let me turn that down. So anyway, fortunately, they have a set of, mood-setting music that they want to play before the video plays, but it should be playing here shortly. Let's turn it up now.
President-elect Joe Biden promising a packed day one agenda.
They've given us a mandate for action on COVID, the economy, climate change, systemic racism.
At the top of his list, combating the coronavirus crisis as new cases surge.
On day one, we're going to put our plan to control this virus into action.
Biden says he wants to create a national COVID strategy right away, urging governors to mandate mask wearing, creating a plan to distribute vaccines and expand COVID testing. Campaign sources telling NBC News that Biden is expected to announce his coronavirus task force on Monday. Biden's victory, a potential boost for Obamacare, with the Affordable Care Act facing a Supreme Court challenge next week.
Folks, 100 million Americans with pre-existing conditions who live in for every day that Obamacare is going to be taken away. I promise you, it will not be.
On immigration, Biden has called for an immediate halt on most deportations for 100 days. And says he'll create a task force to reunite migrant families. When it comes to climate change, Biden says he'll bring the U.S. back into the Paris Climate Agreement.
I've laid out how, in fact, I'm going to get us to net zero emissions in the United States of America by 2050.
All while promising policies to tackle racial and social injustice.
The names of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Jacob Blake, Walter Wallace, they're not going to be soon forgotten. By me, not by anyone in this country.
With a nation divided, a pledge to push unity.
It's time for us to come together as a nation to heal. It's not going to be easy. We have to try.
Jeff, what do we know about the president-elect?
Okay. So, we heard what President-elect Biden... I mean, this was a carefully curated and presentation of, you know, just a few sound bites and snippets. He didn't exactly, I mean, there was a few things they said. They said he was going to do something about immigration. When it came to racism, as far as they wanted to try to address that, I didn't really see, there was nothing substantial, excuse me, anything substantive that I heard there. So, let's see right here. So one thing that he did mention was combating the coronavirus, handling the coronavirus situation head on, which, you know, that was basically a must. There was almost no way around that. But it says here, combating the coronavirus pandemic is first on the president-elect's priority list, with sources telling NBC News he's expected to announce his task force members on Monday. Biden has said he'll act fast to bring the U.S. back into the Paris Climate Agreement. So these are the two things. See, look, the first thing is these are the two things that they can concretely say about what he's going to do. And this is from NBCnews.com. As far as on the other issues, with racism and immigration, it was kind of just glossed over. Let's see if we can find something here. Let's see if we can find something here that would be much more elaborative on exactly, because a lot of presidents, what they say, their first 100 days, they have plans for a lot of things they want to do. So, okay, here we go. So this is an article from Mary Claire, and it states right here, they give a little brief preview, and I'll just read it quickly. Shocker alert. Before President Franklin D. Roosevelt took office, the first 100 days of a new White House administration wasn't exactly newsworthy. Before the 32nd president took a seat in the Oval Office in 1933, those 100 days were just, well, days. It wasn't until Roosevelt passed 76 laws in those first months, while also dealing with the country's crippling financial status and hosting those famous fireside chats, that people start to realize a lot could go down if the right candidate meant business. And now that Joe Biden is the president-elect, you might be wondering, what does he have planned for the first 100 days? All right, so Biden has plans for the climate. For the environment. He's going to rejoin the Paris Agreement. So basically, let's just say, in a nutshell, Biden's going to try to undo everything that Trump did when Trump was in office. Kind of like how Trump tried to undo everything that Obama had kind of set for, had headship or heralded during his terms in office. So now Biden's going to host a climate world summit and discuss with leaders of the major carbon emitting countries to join the United States in making pledges to limit their carbon footprint beyond what they already promised. So that's good news for those companies that are into electric vehicles, hydrogen energy. Excuse me. That's good news for all those companies out there that are into these alternative energies that doesn't use fossil fuels and such. So the stock market, certain segments of the stock market will be loving that. Be the leading country in setting international agreements that will reduce emissions in global shipping and aviation. Once again, this is for business. All these things is for certain sectors of business, although it's related to the environment. Rejoining the Paris Agreement, right? Have the Office of Science and Technology Policy create a report identifying climate strategies and technologies to improve air. All right, okay. So, that's stuff for the climate. Biden has plans for immigration. And the current asylum policies in place. Bring back case management programs while ending prolonged detentions that currently many families suffer from. Reverse Trump's public charge rule that denies permanent residency to legal immigrants if they use food stamps, Medicaid, housing vouchers, or any other public benefits. And the national emergency that allows federal dollars from the Department of Defense to build a U.S. and Mexico border wall, show support and protect dreamers and their families, get rid of the refugee bans, bring humanitarian resources to the border for those in need. His plans for the economy. He wants to create a cabinet-level working group that will promote union organizing and collective bargaining in the public and private sectors. Another cabinet level of labor representatives will be tasked to develop a solution that will increase union density and address economic inequality. The team will also work with numerous unions and trade associations to expand bargaining efforts. Okay. So that set right there, it may have a certain issue because certain companies may not, and corporations may not be on the same page there, but the unions will be. The immigration thing, I mean, you heard it for yourself. Wait, there's more. There's more that Biden plans to do for immigration. Review the countries listed under temporary protected status. Review the countries listed under temporary protected status. Okay. So I guess some countries may no longer have temporary protected status. And some may get theirs renewed. I believe Haiti had a temporary protected status. So that may be of interest to people from Haiti. That, you know, due to when they had a situation with the earthquakes that devastated that island. Restore sensible enforcement priorities. Doesn't know sensible enforcement priorities? What does that mean? That's kind of vague right there. Hold Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that's ICE, and Customs and Border Protection employees accountable for inhumane treatment. Support the current naturalization process for green card holders. Use the Task Force on New Americans to promote immigrant entrepreneurship, civil engagement, and increase access for people to learn new languages. What about those immigrants that don't need to learn new languages? Immigrants that already speak English. Guess they won't benefit from this. Will they be also benefiting from this immigrant entrepreneurship, civil engagement? This sounds like this is centered towards, geared towards a specific group. Maybe that group down there by the border, southern border. I don't know. It's speculation. I'm just reading it. I didn't write it. It's not my plan. Hold a meeting with leaders from El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, and Canada to address the factors driving migration and propose a regional resettlement solution. Okay. Biden's plans for gun safety. I mean, reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act that would keep firearms out of abusers' reach by closing boyfriend and stalking loopholes that continue to allow access to guns by abusive ex-boyfriends as well as stalkers with previous convictions. Biden will have his cabinet look at all federal programs and focus on those likely used that have users who experience more violence in their communities from there. The administration plans to invest funds that will support and provide more trauma-informed and culturally responsive care. He wants to close the Charleston loophole that allows firearms to be purchased before that required background checks have been completed. This is the very loophole that allowed Dylan Roof to buy a gun in 2015 and kill 9 people at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston. He also plans to request a report from the FBI about the cases that background checks were not completed within 10 business days, yet guns were still purchased. From these findings, they want to develop a strategy that can eventually eliminate these occurrences. His appointed attorney general will be asked to come up with recommendations on how the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives could be better to help enforce gun laws. My only question is, who exactly are they trying to keep the guns from? All right, guys. So I believe there's more. There is more that Biden has here planned. And this first, here it goes. Here it is. Biden plans for the LGBTQ plus community. He plans to direct federal resources to help prevent violence against transgender women, focusing on transgender women of color. He wants to pass the Equality Act, which prohibits discrimination based on sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. If passed, he plans to have his cabinet enforce the act across all federal departments and agencies. What? Okay. That, I'm not really going to say too much on that, but because he, on much of whatever, I'm not going to say too much on whatever he apparently in his, what he plans to do, but this is one of the first things you see where he's implemented a federal situation. So that means that whatever laws the situation, that this particular group of people that apparently he has identified in the LGBTQ plus community will have a certain protective status that it goes down with the federal laws. Same thing like those with in the immigrant status down by the southern border, apparently. Biden's plans for housing. On the first day, he plans to direct whoever is his Secretary of Housing and Urban Development to lead a task force that will ask mayors and other elected officials to detail what they believe could make housing available for everyone in their communities. The report would be due within 100 days. His Secretary of Housing and Urban Development will also review current federal housing policies to make sure they apply to Biden's housing first approach. This document will also look into homelessness assistance grants and the result they can provide to communities. It will look into it. Okay, so this is some of what Biden plans to do in his first 100 days. But you heard the video where Biden said that the names of Breonna Taylor, Walter Wallace, you know, and others, forgive me not saying their names, will not be forgotten. It's not if their names will be forgotten. It's if their assaulters will be punished. That is what matters. Because their names won't be forgotten. Their family, their friends, people that know them, people that felt extreme pain and anguish from hearing of their stories. No, they won't forget these people's names. What matters now is if the individuals that savagely murdered or maimed and harmed these people are punished. That's what matters. That's your change. That's your real change. There's no hope in that. There's action. But let's move forward, guys. So, I decided to look up an individual who was hardly ever spoken about. We have Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And Kamala Harris hardly ever talks about her dad. Now, what's mostly known about her dad is that he's a renowned Stanford professor. Okay, great. Congratulations. He has some accomplishments that he had for himself on his own. One of those accomplishments is that he was advising. First, let me state this. An advisor in finance or economics on the economy for Jamaica. And he's of Jamaican background. So that had to be a big thing, for him and Jamaica as a country or whatever. My thing is that I'm not knocking the man. I don't have the credentials that he has. But the thing is, what I look at is I look at the track record. If I advise you on something and it hasn't become self-evident or actualized on what I advised you on whether or not you took my advice, if you took my advice, and the proof isn't there to show that my advice is worthwhile, then it's nothing for me to brag on. For instance, let me put it this way to you differently. I am the type of person where I take immense joy, great joy, in knowing that information that I have imparted onto others who sought that information from me have made success and have made successes. If it's on my resume for somebody to talk about, I was an advisor to you, and the situation ain't looking too good. Well, then, in my opinion, I might not want to go ahead. We're not gonna tout that one so much. You see, well, before I get into, and this is not a personal, I don't know this guy, not a personal opinion or attack, but I'm saying something as far as the person you're going to have the most, if two people give you advice, one person gives you some advice, you follow it, and you end up in a worse situation or in the same place as you started at. Okay, maybe their advice was okay, but it wasn't good for your situation. But another person give you some advice, and then you actually see benefit from it. Who are you going to tout more? That's all I'm saying. Anyway, just because, and it says here, you know, he was a prominent professor at Stanford. I guess that means he was highly respected by his colleagues at Stanford. That's good. That's great. Not a problem. But that's all his accomplishments for himself. But let's look at this. Because in my research about this, this gentleman, Mr. Donald Harris, there is basically no point at any time does this man describe himself as a black man. Other people do. Here it is, right here. I'll tell you right here. According to his Stanford bio, Donald Harris is a naturalized U.S. citizen. He attended the University of California, Berkeley, and worked at the University of Wisconsin-Madison before coming to California. He's traveled extensively and often spoke about the economic situation in his home nation of Jamaica and how to improve the economy there and in other developing nations. In fact, during his time at Stanford, he acted as economic consultant to the Jamaica government and advisor to various prime ministers there. Renee Ann Shirley, former advisor to the Jamaican Prime Minister, said, in 3 years, he got tenure. Think about it, a black man? And then he left and went to go to Stanford? He's a big thing for us. He pushed the boundaries. He was way ahead of his time. All right, so others say he's a black man, but this gentleman has never stated he's a black man. He's never unequivocally stood on that. In fact, there's information here where he has more shown that he is more aligned with, it has been stated that, matter of fact, I believe they have either audio, I can't find the actual article though, where he stated that his family owned slaves. That's where he comes from. I've never heard any person who's black and loves black and loves to be black say that their family comes from owning slaves. So I don't know which family this gentleman is referring to, because to me, if you're talking about, you know, I look at things totally differently. But anyway, let's go on to let's see. So, I mean, I don't want to go into it. They start talking about, you know, they get all this fluff piece about how he met Kamala's mother and all of this. My point is, you've never really heard of this man. This man has never really took any sort of stance that I could really see, you know, and he, you know, so I don't know. And like I said, you know, we can't be, you know what we can't do when we see things like this? We just can't be. Yeah, we can't be emotional about things like that. But so anyway, that's that. But this is what I wanted to get to. This show, this broadcast, I'm making it a bit longer than normal. And it's because I saved this part for last. And if you're still here and you made it through the entire episode, congratulations to you. You have an open mind. You're willing to listen and hear a different point of view, possibly, or maybe you agree with everything I say. But congrats to you. What I wanted to talk about here is I heard someone mentioning and talking about this particular chart. And it's called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. And it reminded me of something that I had seen at some employment workshop some years ago. And so I looked at it. And it starts with, it's a pyramid. And Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs, you have physiological needs, you have safety needs, you have love and belonging, esteem, and self-actualization. Okay, we're going to run through some of the needs. It's pretty, I mean, if you take a few seconds and think about it, maybe a minute or two, you would probably be able to guess and understand what some of these are already. These are not complex topics or subjects. So the basic physiological needs, we're talking about physiological needs, which is at the bottom of the pyramid of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. The basic physiological needs are probably fairly apparent. These include the things that are vital to our survival. Some examples of physiological needs include food, water, breathing, homeostasis. In addition to the basic requirements of nutrition, air and temperature regulation. The physiological needs also include such things as shelter and clothing. Maslow also included sexual reproduction in this level of the hierarchy of needs, since it is essential to the survival and propagation of the species, which is accurate. Hold on a second here, guys. The computer seems to want to do its own thing here now. I hope this thing does not mess up on me at this time. Wanting to do some work on something else, and unfortunately this thing is not. Alright, there it goes. Homeos. Alright, okay. For those that know, homeostasis is the tendency toward a relatively stable equilibrium between interdependent elements, especially as maintained by physiological processes. So, so that's basically your physical needs. Okay, so security and safety needs. As we move up to the second level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the requirements start to become a bit more complex. At this level, the needs for security and safety become primary. People want control and order in their lives. So this need for safety and security contributes largely to behaviors at this level. Some of the basic security and safety needs include financial security, health and wellness, safety against accidents and injury. So, according to this article in Very Well Mind, because they're breaking it down, and this is where I'm reading from, verywellmind.com. Finding a job, obtaining health insurance and health care, contributing money to a savings account, and moving into a safer neighborhood are all examples of actions motivated by the security and safety needs. Together, the safety and physiological levels of the hierarchy make up what is often referred to as the basic needs. See, once you think about it, everybody understands it, or everybody should understand it at this point. Social needs. The social needs in Maslow's hierarchy include such things as love, acceptance, and belonging. At this level, the need for emotional relationships drives human behavior. Some of the things that satisfy this need include friendships, romantic attachments, family, social groups, community groups, churches, and religious organizations. In order to avoid problems such as loneliness, depression, and anxiety, it is important for people to feel loved and accepted by other people. Personal relationships with friends, family, and lovers play an important role, as does involvement in other groups that might include religious groups, sports teams, book clubs, and other group activities. Next up on the hierarchy of needs is the esteem needs. At the fourth level of Maslow's hierarchy is the need for appreciation and respect. When the needs at the bottom three levels have been satisfied, the esteem needs begin to play a more prominent role in motivating behavior. So, those first initial two needs they're like priorities. You can't think about anything else if you don't have those pretty much in a way. But once you have those kind of covered, then the social needs become like the next thing almost that most people can't really think. They can't think of anything else because they're always concerned with their relationships, friendships, romantic attachments, family, social groups. Those are the people that you go back and forth with, that that you seek to identify with, and where you tend to get your support, and even possibly grow from. But you may also grow away or grow out of them because your growth pattern or your growth trajectory is beyond them. And that's a topic for another time and subject. But let's go back into the esteem needs. But once you have those covered, then you get into these esteem needs. And they, as it says here, these team needs begin to play a more prominent role in motivating behavior. At this point, it becomes increasingly important to gain the respect and appreciation of others. People have a need to accomplish things and then have their efforts recognized. In addition to the need for feelings of accomplishment and prestige, esteem needs include such things as self-esteem and personal worth. People need to sense that they are valued and by others and feel that they are making a contribution to the world. Participation in professional activities, academic accomplishments, athletic or team participation, and personal hobbies can all play a role in fulfilling the esteem needs. People who are able to satisfy the esteem needs by achieving good self-esteem and the recognition of others tend to feel confident in their abilities. Those who lack self-esteem and the respect of others can develop feelings of inferiority. Together, the esteem and social levels make up what is known as the psychological needs of the hierarchy. Indeed, self-actualization needs. At the very peak of Maslow's hierarchy are the self-actualization needs. What a man can be, he must be, Maslow explained, referring to the need people have to achieve their full potential as human beings. According to Maslow's definition of self-actualization, it may be loosely described as the full use and exploitation of talents, capabilities, potentialities, etc. Such people seem to be fulfilling themselves and to be doing the best that they are capable of doing. They are people who have developed or are developing to the full stature of which they're capable. Self-actualizing people are self-aware, concerned with personal growth, less concerned with the opinions of others, and interested in fulfilling their potential. Okay, so in this particular article, The Very Well Mind, there are criticisms of Maslow's theory, such as needs don't follow a hierarchy. It says that while some research showed some support for Maslow's theories, most research has not been able to substantiate the idea of a needs hierarchy. It's been reported that there was little evidence for Maslow's ranking of those needs and even less evidence that these needs are in a hierarchical order. The theory is difficult to test. Other criticisms of Maslow's theory note that this definition of self-actualization is difficult to test scientifically. His research on self-actualization was also based on a very limited sample of individuals. It included people he knew as well as biographies of famous individuals that Maslow believed to be self-actualized. Okay, now, why was Maslow's hierarchy influential? Maslow's hierarchy of needs represents part of an important shift in psychology. Rather than focusing on abnormal behavior and development, Maslow's humanistic psychology was focused on the development of healthy individuals. And then it goes on, and you can find the article on verywellmind.com. Well, guys, we have reached the end of this particular episode, and I'll be closing it out at this time. So, thanks for joining the Block Report podcast and tuning in with me, your host, Tafari XL, aka TDK the Magnificent. And we will be reporting to you live from the block, possibly a block near you, in the near future. Until that time, and as always, be you, be dope, be different, be safe, be real. Until the next time, peace.